Welcome to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. University students from Germany, the Fargo Park District, and Wurst Beer Hall are collaborating to host the mobile Basium, which presents information about Heartland's future, how can we live together on a changing planet. And we have three students from Germany who have stopped by our studios, and we're happy that they're all here. Let me introduce each of you individually, and I'll ask you about your backgrounds and what it is, why you're here, and what you hope to learn. So, Jonah Kaiser, I'm going to start with you first, if I could. Give me your background.
Okay, so I am currently studying at the University of Erfurt in Germany, and my major is International Relations and Social Sciences. And right now we're touring across the Midwest with our mobile exhibit, the Basium. And I think about how we got here, that's a story for later on. We'll get there in any second now.
Also with me is Katharina Hirsch.
Hats, yeah.
Thank you, Katharina. Give me your background. What are you studying in university, and why did you feel it necessary to come to the United States?
I'm studying English and communication at the University of Erfurt as well. So that's already a pretty good reason to come to the United States, to see how English is actually spoken by native people. But actually, I've come because I really wanted to do the work we are doing right now on the Basium, on our Museum on Wheels, talking about climate change, connecting across borders, across cultures, because it's something that we all face together as humans.
Sure. And then also with us is Faye Telemann.
Yes.
Did I get that correct, Faye?
Yes, that's me.
What are you studying at university?
I study international relations and philosophy. I came for the pretty similar reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, sustainability is a topic really dear to my heart. So it was really interesting. And to have this chance to talk about it with so many different people was just a great opportunity that I wanted to take.
All three of you and others are going to be with the Basium, which is available at Broadway Square tomorrow in Fargo from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. It's open to everyone, and it's also free. Who do you hope comes to the museum? And whoever answers the question, I'll identify you for our listeners.
All right.
Jonah,
it's me, Jonah. So first of all, we are actually also open today until 10 p.m. So today and tomorrow we'll be here in Fargo. And we welcome just everybody who is in for talks about solutions on climate change, just exchanging different perspectives on that. And actually, we also got a second exhibit on board. So our bus sort of carries two interesting exhibits, one on the inside and one on the outside. The outside is dedicated to our climate change topic, whereas on the inside, there's an exhibit about Midwestern social history, which actually talks about five forgotten moments in the past.
Katharina, this is not your first day with the Basium, is that correct?
No, I've been here for a while.
What are people telling you, and what are you thinking about as a student from Germany when you talk to folks from the United States about your Basium?
Honestly, I thought we would have a lot more people who don't believe that climate change is real. I thought we would have to do a lot more carbon dioxide is heating up the atmosphere, all of these talks. Instead, we are getting so many new ideas actually from people who are also already working on combating climate change. And that is something that has given me actually a lot of hope. And I've had a lot of wonderful interactions with people on that topic. And it's really every day there are new, different people that I wouldn't expect. I wouldn't have expected to have 6-year-old Girl Scouts. I wouldn't have expected to have a 96-year-old. So we've had everything and everyone, all kinds of people on the bus, and it's always been a really enriching experience talking to them.
Faye, same with you. Have you been surprised at all by the folks who have come to the bus?
So I've had only one showing so far, which was in a school, and that was really, really great because all the little kids, they were so excited to talk about this topic, and it was very interesting to them. And they came up with such great ideas that also we, because sustainability is such a big topic, obviously we couldn't put everything in there, but they brought new ideas up that were really, really good, even though they were fifth graders and really, really cool people. Yeah.
And this is also kind of how our exhibit is supposed to work. It's constantly expanding because on our website, heartlandsfuture.com, we add all of these topics that we learn about while we're here in the U.S. to kind of find a build a database that then everybody can use as a resource. So the exhibit keeps growing based on what people tell us and what people want to share.
There had to have been a time in each of your lives when you recognized that climate change is a thing. Then you all took it to another level, like maybe I can have an impact. Share that with me. How did you get to where you are today?
For me, I think it was just always important because we just grew up with that knowledge that the Earth is changing and we have to do something about it. But it especially hit me when my grandma lost her house, actually, in a flood. And, she wasn't able to go back, really, because the house was just destroyed. And that was really, really concerning to me. And obviously, it was like a wake-up call because, I mean, climate change is always like, oh, yeah, it's like far away or you don't really, cannot really grasp it. But that was a moment that really, like, hit you in the face.
Others.
So it's quite similar with me. Climate change always was a topic since elementary school back in Germany. In the recent years, I just realized how many things are going on worldwide. I mean, just talking about the wildfires here in the United States and in Canada, Australia as well, and all the droughts. And even now in Germany, as Fee already said, we are experiencing an increased flood risk. We had a tornado back in Germany last month, which is really unusual. So we are experiencing these impacts firsthand. And as Faye said, they seemed so far away. And there are people on this globe who live with these impacts since decades now. And yeah, I think it's just time that we bring that topic, that issue on the table and discuss it very publicly so that everybody gets the chance to comment on it and share ideas.
Katarina, how about you? What's your history?
I think I had a similar experience of having to see it in order to really grasp it and really, we've all grown up with it, of course, but I really needed to see it and see the effects firsthand in person. And that for me was when I did an internship in Malawi, that's in southern Africa, and we didn't have a public disposal system. Everything that we consumed, everything, all of the plastics, all of the things we bought, they would end up in a hole in our backyard. So things that usually were just chipped away and I would never have to think about my waste and my my impact on my surroundings again would end up in the garden instead, where I would be faced with them every day and see them when I was picking up plants. So I couldn't really escape my responsibility anymore. And then a few months later, also during that internship, a drought hit the city and a lot of the public wells actually dried up and the lines for the water trucks got longer and longer. And those were all people who lived incredibly sustainably because they didn't use a lot of energy at all. They didn't fly. They didn't use cars. And they were the first to experience the damage that we'd done in the rest of the globe, in Northern America and Europe mainly.
I'm curious to ask each of you this. We've heard here in the United States that Germany was stressed for energy this past winter because of the war in Ukraine. Did each of you live that, and has that changed at all or modified at all your country's thinking about sustainability, about a green climate?
I think people really realize that we do have to become a little bit more independent with our energy sources. But to be honest, it was also kind of everyone was scared in the beginning because they didn't know and they didn't know what would happen. But at the end of the day, there was enough gas to heat everyone, so it was not that big of a deal. Of course, the energy grid prices rose a little bit, definitely, and that is a fact that we really have to take into consideration because talking about also social justice with climate change is very important. But it was not as bad, I would say, than expected.
But I do think that it led people to think about how they can reduce the energy they're consuming in everyday life because you could just see it in your wallet. People needed to save gas and energy in general. So I think that is something that has stayed with us.
If you were to put the United States on one side of the scale and Germany on the other side of the scale, and then which country really has grasped climate change and really grasped your sustainability topics that you've discussed, how we're looking towards green energy, et cetera. Who's in the lead here?
It's hard to say because we're both so different. We're in very different climates. Your country is just humongous for our European standards. So what is already true in one part of the United States is not as true in other parts. So it's hard to draw a direct comparison. I would say that in Germany, talking about climate change and talking about sustainability has become more of a social norm. I would say, I don't know if that directly has to translate into actions all the time, but I would say that it's more on the public mind. You can, it's not only people are actually interested in a topic, but you will talk about it and see, be confronted with the topic on your way to get your donut in the morning or in the bakery.
And how would you be confronted with the topic?
In Germany, when you go to the supermarket, you do not get free plastic bags, for example. You either bring your bag with you, or you can buy a little more robust bags there, but you have to pay for them. So that's just one incentive to tell people, hey, think about reusing your stuff and not just buying more and more.
And is that philosophy driven by the government, or is it driven by people like you?
So I think that really comes from different sources. So obviously there are a lot of people who care deeply about climate and that fight for it, as we are doing here in the United States right now. There are many groups in Germany that advocate for better environmental policies. But I think also politics play an important role. We talked already about how the energy crisis in Europe changed some things. So sometimes it's not necessarily environmental reasons that push policies forward, but also, for example, energy independency. And we realized that we're way too dependent on Russian gas. So now the government wants to introduce a new bill, which basically will forbid to install new gas heaters from 2024 onwards. So that means that we will have to install heat pumps, which, for example, you in the U.S. are already using since decades. And we have to, learn more about that. And I think, those are really different sources, civil society, but also new government action that really push things forward. We also have now it's called 49 euro ticket, which is basically a ticket for public transit, which you can use Germany-wide. So you could drive from the southern end to Germany until the northern end with this ticket and use all public transit except the fast trains. But yeah, I think these incentives are quite important.
If I may come back to the original question, because I think you're trying to kind of like you're acting like climate change is a competition because there is no lead in this.
I'm wondering which, and I don't mean it to be a competition, but I'm wondering which society takes it more seriously today in your eyes.
And I think that's not necessarily the point that we need to make, because I think the point that we need to make is that we just bring the conversation forward, because if we keep having to think like, oh, who's in the lead, who's doing what better, we lose the sentiment of, hey, we have a problem and we have to solve it and everyone has to be involved to solve this. We need to talk about this, and that's the goal. And to have these kind of questions, I'm not sure if they're leading us in the right direction, to
sure,
be honest.
Sure, I understand what you're saying. What do you tell people that might come to you being climate skeptics? What is it that you would want to communicate with them?
So first of all, people come from many different backgrounds. So for a lot of people, it's more convenient to take climate action into account when you have a lot of resources. If you really can buy local, a little bit more expensive food, for example, that's a good thing. But people that are probably a little more skeptical because of financial resources or also because of their beliefs, I think the important thing is to not overwhelm them and confront them directly, because people will back off and not listen to you. So you have to sort of find a common base on that. We once were talking to a man who basically said that CO2 emissions are not a problem in the area of the Midwest because, the crops from the fields absorb all the CO2. He didn't agree on global warming due to greenhouse gases, but he agreed on pushing forward green energy to be more independent. So I think it's also important to, if somebody is skeptical, to find a common ground on which you can discuss things, even though the beliefs might differ, you know?
Take me inside the bus. We're interviewing, we're talking with you in our Fargo studios. The bus is a block or two away. What am I going to see when I walk into the Buseum, which is going to be here in Fargo tonight and also tomorrow until 5 o'clock, free and open to the public? What am I going to see?
Well, first you're going to notice the wonderful, colorful outside. That is our climate change exhibit. You can walk all around it and look at different topics of everyday life. We wanted to talk about things that are very easy to grasp and kind of visible in our day-to-day life. So we're talking about transportation. We're talking about the clothes we wear. We're talking about food, all of these things that we see in daily life. And then you can also step into the bus. On one side, you'll have the little mini movie auditorium where we show little short clips about people who are already doing something in their area of life. The good thing about climate change is, well, the bad thing about climate change is that it is everywhere, but it's also good because that means that you can do something in every single area of your life if you so choose. And then on the other side of the bus, in the inside, there's the historical exhibit, and you'll find information on the anti-German hysteria during World War I, on bootlegging in the Midwest. There's a little bit about the flu pandemic. We also have information on the Cow Wars, and lastly, the Klan in the Midwest.
How did each of you learn about the Buseum? When did that come on your radar? And I should say, you didn't know each other a year ago, did you? Did you all know each other? Or?
I mean, Erfurt is not too big, so especially our university, you kind of see each other around.
Okay. You're aware of each other. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And
Kat
and me lived together before, so
okay.
Yeah.
She roped me into this.
So she's to blame.
Yeah.
Well, how did you learn about it to start?
So our studies are divided into three subjects, so our major, our minor, and then an interdisciplinary field where you can choose basically whatever. You can also go to a choir or to learn about photography. And Michael Rick Trams, he offered a course on the Buseum as a historian, and he said he wanted to do something different this time, and he wants to talk about sustainability. And that's how we got into it, just because of that class.
Jonah, how did you hear about this?
Same thing for me. So I also took the class for the credits at university. And then Michael told us quite in the beginning that he wanted to do this whole new climate change exhibit and that he also wanted to bring some of his students to the United States to talk to Americans about it. So sort of having that first-hand exchange because we were the ones who actually worked on the panels. I mean, Svea's not here today. She also played a big part in that. And we created all the panel texts and so on. So, we wanted to talk to people about it. And Michael also saw this as an opportunity to really talk about climate change and not about partisan politics, because we're from Germany. We're not from the United States. We can't vote here. So we're really here to talk about climate change and solutions.
The bus won't be just in Fargo. Do you know your short-term schedule, where else you plan to go?
Yes, we do. So we will be here in Fargo for the next 2 days, but then during the period of June, we will be every Tuesday at Nicolette Mall in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, showing our bus there from more or less 10:30 until 2 p.m. Then on June 10th and June 11th, we'll be with the Germanic American Institute in Fargo. They're having the German Days, sort of a little festival going on, and we will also be present with our bus there. And we still have some gigs in Duluth for the commemoration of the lynchings. And also in Stillwater on June 17th. But you can also check our schedule, which you'll find on our website, www.heartlandsfuture.com. Yeah.
We have a couple minutes left. What has surprised you most about our country? And I know for each of you, this isn't your first time in the United States.
It's my first time.
This is your first time, Katrina, and Jonah and Faye, you've been here before. What has surprised you about our culture, about us as a country?
I mean, for me, the first week when it was really, oh my God, I can't believe I am here still, I had a lot of moments where I felt like I was on a movie set, because of course we watch a lot of American media, so I knew like the red cups that you drink stuff from at parties, but then I saw them and was like, oh, people really do that, and I had a lot of moments like that.
Yeah, Jonah?
The last time I've been to the U.S., I just visited New York, Atlanta, and Miami, so some big cities. And it's actually really cool to see also the more rural parts. I mean, we've been to the Ozarks in Richland. We showed the bus there. And it's just great to see the countryside because, as Kata said, we know everything out of movies, but it's actually great to see how huge this country is, like all the farms, which are also really picturesque. And also people here, they're so welcoming and lovely. We're just having a great time.
Does the media get us right, Fee?
Well, to be honest, the very first thing that I thought was surprising was very, very basic because it was the milk cartons, like the gallon of, like the jugs of milk, like the gallons seemed very, very big to me. And that's the first thing I can remember after coming from a plane, very exhausting journey. And then going to it, I think it was a gas station just to stop. And I saw these jugs of milk, and I was very confused by it, what it is.
We have just about a minute left. What would be your message to people, that your invitation, if you will, on why they should really come and see you here in Fargo, either tonight at Broadway Square or tomorrow until 5 o'clock? One more big pitch here.
So we're not here to point fingers and tell people what to do. We really just want to engage in conversations and learn from each other, because I think as two countries of the global north, it's our responsibility to exchange thoughts on solutions. And we're all together in this, so it really touches everybody and every aspect of our lives. So, come by and talk to us about it.
When will you all go back to Germany?
It will be in early July.
So you'll be out about a month.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll see the big celebration of your country, and then that will be our final big hooray, and then we'll go back to Germany.
Well, best wishes to you. It's the Buseum. It will be at Broadway Square here in Fargo this afternoon, this evening, and also tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's open, and it's free to the public, and everyone is welcome. It's been my pleasure to visit with Jonah Kaiser, with Katarina Hirsch.
Very good.
Thank you. And Fee Telemann. Yes. Thank you so much for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by North Dakota Living, celebrating more than 66 years of featuring the great people and places of North Dakota, and proudly serving the members of North Dakota's electric and telephone cooperatives.
Hi, I'm Tom Brusso. On the next Great American Folk Show, writer Julie Wolfson shares culinary delights from her recent trip to Japan.
I could really go for some okonomiyaki and a cold beer right now.
Plus, backed on his recent album by fellow Canadians, Bahamas, Doug Paisley joins us.
And those bygone times come back to me.
Music from Antonio Lopez, folk band Jackson Pines, and photographer Cinziana Velicescu. The Great American Folk Show is Saturday at 5 p.m. Central on Prairie Public.
Coming up, our weekly discussion and review of the headlines with our news director, Dave Thompson, and also a movie review with Matt Olean. But first, this news.
Good afternoon. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald. The executive director of the North Dakota League of Cities says, on balance, the 2023 legislature was good to local governments. Matt Gardner says infrastructure is a big issue for the cities, and he says the legislature did well on that front.
You know, Operation Prairie Dog, as we heard, filled for the first time this year with budget projections and where it's at within the formula. It should receive funding this year. The water budget, you know, through the State Water Commission, there's a good amount of funding in there for water projects, you know, both urban and rural projects, so we feel comfortable there. The Department of Environmental Quality has funding for sewer and wastewater projects in the form of low-interest loans, so communities have ways to get low-interest loans.
Gardner says another positive was the continuation of the Legacy Fund loan program, which he says at one time during the session was on the chopping block.
The Legacy Loan Fund, you know, is a program that helps communities get low-interest loans for infrastructure projects, which in turn, you know, puts downward pressure on needed property tax increases. So we feel pretty good about that.
But Gardner says the cities are concerned about changes in the PERS retirement fund from the current defined benefit plan to a 401k-style defined contribution plan for new hires.
Our cities felt that as they're recruiting individuals, you know, their wages can't compete with the private sector. So one way that they're able to recruit and retain is with a defined benefit plan.
The League is holding a series of regional listening sessions to discuss the legislation. North Dakota's two U.S. senators voted in favor of the bill to raise the federal debt ceiling. It passed last night. Senator Kevin Cramer says part of the bill dealing with the permitting process is good for North Dakota and could help speed up approval of certain energy-related projects. He also said it reins in spending. In recorded comments supplied by his office, Cramer said it was important the debt ceiling be raised to avoid default.
That would rattle markets. It would delay pay and benefits for our military and veterans and seniors. So really, default wasn't an option. It should never be an option, but neither is just a blank check. So I think this really strikes the right balance.
The vote was 63-36. The North Dakota Department of Health is gearing up to begin its surveillance of West Nile virus in the state. Amanda Bakken is West Nile Surveillance Coordinator. She says a typical year, anywhere from 20 to 30 cases of the mosquito-borne virus are officially confirmed with the department. She says a lot of times many people don't know they have it, so those cases are never confirmed. Symptoms of West Nile can include headache, body aches, joint pains, vomiting, diarrhea, and rash. Bakken says mosquitoes that transmit the virus are most active at dawn and dusk. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
As long as I can remember, I have heard him when he meets a new person, he will say to this person, "Do you live around here or ride a bicycle?"
Join us this week on Away with Words.
I just want to hold you and embrace you before I unleash this hell called English upon you.
That's Away with Words, Saturday at 9 Central, 8 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and it's time for our weekly review of the news here in North Dakota. And we're pleased to be joined by Dave Thompson. Dave's our news director here at Prairie Public. Dave, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you much, Craig.
Dave, I want to ask you a question. Is there a news desert at the Capitol? And the reason I ask, as we speak, and it's so unfortunate, there's not a single newspaper reporter in North Dakota assigned to the Capitol beat.
There is for the moment, but I do know that both the Forum and the Bismarck Tribune are looking for people to take that position. And I understand that there have been some applicants for it. So we expect it to be filled, but it might be a couple weeks yet.
Give us a picture, a look back on the coverage that the beat got in the Capitol City here 10, 15 years ago versus the eyes, I guess, that are on state government today.
Let me just tell you that at one time, the Tribune had three reporters assigned to the Capitol during a legislative session. The Forum would have a couple. We would have television stations from Fargo send people. Bismarck would have its television stations. We had other radio stations in Bismarck that were doing news, and they'd have people up there. And then there was us. Now, really, because I've got more responsibilities, I'm doing more than just the Capitol, but focusing a lot on the Capitol. And right now there are two television reporters on the same boat that I am. One of them is leaving to go to work for private industry. One of them is staying. And the person who is leaving, well, that station is now looking for somebody to take that position too. A lot of churn.
Sure, there's a lot of churn. But aren't we the losers here, Dave, in your mind?
Yes, we are. We are the losers because the more sets of eyes that you have on the state capitol and the workings of government, the better off we all are, because you can learn a lot about what's going on, how the state is spending the money that was allocated during the last legislative session, what policy initiatives are coming down, things like that. You need more eyes on the Capitol.
And, of course, there are so many committees, and with fewer eyes, there's fewer reporting about important committee work.
That is correct, too.
Dave, the Bank of North Dakota reported record assets of $10.2 billion, and Governor Burgum criticized the legislature for then transferring $150 million of those profits to the state's general fund. Bring us up to date.
Right. Now, the profit margin is $191.2 million. And the legislature decided to transfer $150 million of the profit to the state general fund. Well, what happened is the governor got a hold of this, took a look at this, and along came the results of April tax collections. And guess what? April tax collections were $150 million ahead of forecast. And the governor said, well, this is basically going to mean the $150 million you took out of the bank is going back to the bank, but will only get the interest rates that most checking accounts get. He claims, and with some justification, that you use the $150 million for further investments, you're going to have a higher return on investment.
So what's the fallout here? What will happen next?
Well, the fallout is that what happens is that the $150 million will be put in the checking account of the Bank of North Dakota and get the 1% to 2% interest. Meanwhile, there is a study about how special funds are managed, how funds in general are managed, and the governor is hoping that it will include this Bank of North Dakota transfer. There are two state-owned institutions, the Bank of North Dakota and the State Mill and Elevator. The legislature has, by statute, the authority to transfer profits to the general fund if needed.
Dave, North Dakota Secretary of State Michael Howe announced that the legislature has allocated $5 million to update election administration software and funding for a new campaign finance software system. What's the upshot of that?
The upshot of that is that in both cases you have vendors who no longer want to be part of election systems. They want to get out of that business. And in both cases, North Dakota is the lone customer of that vendor. So now they're going to be looking for new vendors, and there are others out there, to look at election administration software. Now, this is separate from the actual ballot counting software. It is talking about assigning precincts, assigning precinct committeemen, and also working on just general election, basically the basics of it. Now, same with the campaign finance system. There has been some complaints that the campaign finance system is not the easiest thing to navigate. So Michael Howe said is he's looking for a new vendor that will make it much more easy and much more transparent for people, candidates, as well as voters to take a look at who spent what on your race and where did your contributions come from.
Transparency is that key word there, I think.
Absolutely.
That Secretary of State is looking for. And Dave, as we alluded to earlier, the Legislative Management Committee approved 49 studies for the 2023-2024 interim. That's where so much of the work for the state gets done.
Right, right.
What's going to rise to the top of being most important here?
Well, I think some of the mandated studies are going to be important about looking at the human service system, looking at the needs of the state penitentiary, looking at the needs for the state hospital. But a couple of things that really caught my eye about the optional studies that the committee approved. One is the adequacy of spending on electric vehicle charging stations. And the other is examining the impact of replacing school snow days with virtual instruction days. Once the legislature was able to get that federal funding to, you know, have virtual learning in schools, there has been some concern that maybe schools are being a little bit more quick on the draw when they're trying to cancel school on snow days because they have virtual instruction days. Add to that that there seemed to have been a kind of a drop in test scores because of virtual instruction. So that's going to be, I think, a very interesting study to watch.
I still can't wrap my head around having to go to school on a snow day, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you, when I went to school back in the 60s and 70s, both our grade school and high school were very reluctant to cancel school and only did so in certain circumstances. And when I said circumstances, that means you couldn't get to school. The snow was so deep you couldn't get to school. But, you know, in the case, they're thinking that maybe you know, that's gotten a little bit squishy.
Sure. The Fiscal Responsibility Act passed in Congress last night, and both North Dakota Senators, Senator Hoeven and Senator Kramer, voted in favor of the bill. Did that surprise you at all? And I ask you that question because both of Wyoming's senators, where I came from, voted no. Both, of course, are very conservative states.
Right. But I honestly think in North Dakota's case, one thing that helped get the ball over the goal line is that NEPA, you know, permitting for pipelines to make the pipeline process a little mm-hmm. bit easier. And they said that that's good. Also, the clawback from the COVID money and reducing the federal deficit by $2.1 trillion. Plus, both realize, both Senator Kramer and Senator Hoeven, Senator Hoeven being a former banker and former president of the Bank of North Dakota, by the way, they both realize that, you know, default was not an option because of the nervousness it would send through the economy and actually possibly hurt the economy for a while.
So, Dave, apparently North Dakota will have its own presidential candidate. Governor Burgum's about to announce, and I know you'll talk about this more Monday on the news roundtable, but
right.
What are your thoughts about this today?
You know, basically, I know that it's just a blip on the radar right now, the national media and the national parties. But I would tell you, don't count Governor Burgum out for this reason. In 2016, when he announced for governor, he said he was going to bypass the normal process, of which is you go to the Republican Party convention and you get nominated for it. Well, Wayne Stengem was nominated for governor. Well, Governor Burgum had a very aggressive campaign. Some may say it actually was a little bit of a dirty campaign. And some may say, no, this is the way politics are played these days. He won it. He won the nomination in the primary and then won the race for governor in November. So the governor knows how to win, and he is backed by a lot of money. He has personal money, but he has some powerful people. For example, Bill Gates is a close personal friend because Governor Burgum started that software company,
Great Plains,
Great Plains Software,
sure.
Sold it to Microsoft. And Fargo for a while, I don't know if that's still the case, Fargo was the largest Microsoft campus outside Seattle. So that gives you an idea.
Any thought that he's running to be on the ticket with somebody, or do you believe he's in it to become the next president?
I actually believe he's in it to be the next president. I don't know if he'd go for a cabinet position as kind of a prize, or maybe a vice presidential could be a consolation prize. That's still possible. You never say never in politics, of course, but I do think he's in it to win it.
Dave, there was some consternation on the campus of Mayville State University this week. Some folks expressing their displeasure in a parking lot with President Brian Van Horn. Give us a little update about what might be happening there.
Well, there was possibly a volleyball coach, longtime volleyball coach, was not renewed. And the word circulated that it was a firing, and that caused the protest. And there's been some unrest at Mayville because at one point, President Van Horn was actually living in Grand Forks because at the time they were redoing the president's house at Mayville, which needed some redoing. So there was consternation that he wasn't living on campus, but he was making the trip every day. Now that seems to have been that's calmed down quite a bit. But, you know, apparently this volleyball coach was pretty popular. Now, President Van Horn is constricted. He can't discuss the situation because of confidentiality. So there's a little unrest there. It's not the only campus in North Dakota where there has been unrest. But, you know, the chancellor and the leader of the university system came out very strongly and expressing their support for Van Horn.
Dave, we'll look forward to hearing from you again Monday with other journalists from around the state.
Should be fun.
On our journalism roundtable.
There's a lot to talk about.
There sure is. We'll look forward to that. But thank you for joining us today.
Thank
Dave
you,
Thompson,
Craig.
Our news director here at Prairie Public.
You bet, Craig. Thanks.
There's more Main Street coming up next. Stay with us.
On Prairie Public Primetime TV tonight.
He took white America by storm. Broke down barriers
to be a black artist and go to the top of the pop charts
and changed music forever.
You look at music and where rock came from, he is right in there.
See why there is only one.
That I am the king of rock and roll!
Little Richard, on American Masters.
Watch American Masters tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain on Prairie Public.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Well, there's the fanfare. That means it's time to go off to the movies with Matt Olien. And today's film, You Hurt My Feelings. We've all done this before. Said a little white lie to a significant other because we didn't want to hurt their feelings. And then what happens when that person finds out?
That's what the movie's about. And I really want to credit writer-director Nicole Holofcener, who's really a good director. She's crafted a very original story here, which seemingly on the surface is about nothing, but it's about everything because you can relate to everything going on in this movie. And I've had a couple friends of mine say, oh, it's just about kind of affluent Manhattanites. What do I care about this? But it feels like a Woody Allen movie when Woody Allen used to make good movies. But it's also different. It's Holofcener kind of puts her little stamp on it as well, and it's funny. But what's funny is kind of the everyday situations. But yes, there are hurt feelings in this movie, as you can tell by the title. And it, you know, we follow the lives of the couple, Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies. She's a novelist. She's working on a new book, which becomes the real centerpiece of this little white lie. And Tobias Menzies plays a therapist who's her husband. And yes, it's really about how brutally honest should we be with loved ones, whether they're kids or significant other, and what happens when this gets leaked out. And I think that's the real interesting thing of the film that'll spark a lot of discussion afterwards. It's a short film. It's only 93 minutes long. And what Holofcener really does well, too, is not only are the two leads really good in this movie, the supporting characters are well written, too. And I find in a lot of American comedies, sometimes the supporting characters are underwritten, not well written, compared to British comedies, which always have these interesting supporting characters. But Nicole Holofcener does a great job with this. Owen Teague is really good as Dreyfus and Menzies' son, Elliot, who works at a pot shop and he's trying to write a play. And they're trying to encourage him, of course, to write that play. Michaela Watkins is excellent as Dreyfus's sister. Her husband is played by Arian Moyed, who's kind of a wannabe actor. That's a good performance. Jeannie Berlin plays Dreyfus's mother, kind of the quintessential older Jewish mother. Jeannie Berlin always is a scene-stealing actress. She's funny. And I think the funniest part of the movie is when Tobias Menzies is counseling a couple in couples therapy. And they're played by Amber Tamblyn and David Cross. And they're having all kinds of marital problems, and he is really no help at all. And it kind of makes mock of couples therapy. And, you know, what's the value of it if people are in couples therapy? Is the writing already on the wall? And they're really funny in their parts. They're this fighting married couple. And Menzies just kind of doesn't really give them much. And it's quite hilarious how they play the part. So everyone is well written, well drawn in this movie. And, yes, it will spark discussion. And it's a short film. It's well written. It's well done. It's laugh out loud funny in some parts because of the ordinary things that are going on. And so I think it's being trivial to say this film is about nothing because everyone can relate to what's going on in this movie. Marlon Brando once said years ago when he was alive, everyone acts every day. You go down the street, you meet someone you know, and you say, oh, you look nice today. And Brando would say, maybe we don't really realize that, but we say it. So that's what people do is we encourage, we flatter, but should we? And that's the real question here.
Right. Well, it is hard, too, to get feedback that is not delivered very well if it's not something that you like. I don't want to hear that from my husband. I want him to just be supportive.
And the question is that rewarding? Right. Is that helping or is
that
not
kind,
helping? And so,
that...
but Holofcener really, the key moment of the film, which you're going to have to go see to see, she frames that really well so you could actually see it happening. Like, oh, that actually could happen where she overhears something that her husband is saying to her brother-in-law, the husband of her sister. And so that becomes really the catalyst to what's going on. And, It's just a fascinating film. Jeanne Berlin is so good as the mother. She's such a scene-stealing actress. And just the inappropriate things she says, just, you know, I'm old and I'm going to say what I want type of things. But it feels real, too.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting to me, and this is all in the trailer, so I'm not giving any spoilers, but right away you're sort of thinking that the pain in this marriage comes from infidelity. And then when you find out that it's from feedback that he didn't want to give her about the novel, just a really interesting exploration of the kind of psychic pain that you can be in and the kind of and the kind of support that you rely on out of a marriage.
And I admire that Holof Center makes the film about that, not marital infidelity. That's the typical lazy rom-com thing is someone's attracted to a younger person. That's not what this movie's about at all. They clearly love each other. And so I think I give her a lot of credit for crafting an original story, which I've really never seen before. I likened it to a Woody Allen movie, but the premise of the little white lies, how honest we should be, I don't think I've ever seen that stretched out to 93 minutes long, and it does not overstay its welcome. It ends at just the right time. But lots of really good performances in this, and I really thought the couple's therapy sessions were hilarious.
Is it streaming or is it in movie theaters?
Fargo Theater at various theaters, so just check your listings around the state.
All right. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, much more known for her television performances, but she is tied with an Oscar-winning actress. And this is back to Emmys. She's tied for the most Emmy wins for acting with which actress who took home Best Supporting Oscar in 1971? In 72 for a 71 film.
Cloris Leachman.
All right. We've been to the movies with Madeline.
Good question.
Support is provided by Drs. Kirk Coyer and Phil Sondrel of Urgent Med, providing personalized walk-in medical care for all ages 7 days a week in South Fargo. Urgent Med, where urgent care doesn't feel like urgent care.
This is Dakota Datebook for June 2nd. Adolf Marcus Christensen III was born in February of 1944. Known as Mark, he was the grandson of North Dakota Supreme Court Justice A.M. Christensen, known as the Lincoln of North Dakota, and the son of A.M. Christensen II, an Army flight instructor who later founded the Bismarck Zoo. Mark was raised on his family's hobby farm among a multitude of exotic animals, such as monkeys, alligators, wolves, boa constrictors, and more. Once, when Mark tried to sneak into the house after curfew, he was pounced on by a mountain lion known as Richard the Lionheart. The farm was transformed by his father into a nationally accredited zoo with more than 500 specimens. Mark joined the Army and had just graduated as an officer from Ranger School when he met Betsy and asked her on a date. "No," she said. "Why?" asked Mark. "Because you cuss," she said. Mark promised he'd change, and they started dating. On this date in 1968, Betsy and Mark were married. In August of 1968, Mark was sent to Vietnam, and by October was wounded. After recuperating back in the States, he went back to Vietnam and served another tour. Betsy and Mark wrote each other every day he was overseas. After his tours, Captain Mark Christensen was assigned to be an instructor at the Florida Ranger School, where he taught helicopter rappelling, hand-to-hand combat, and, thanks to his experience at the family farm, even a reptile class. Betsy taught elementary school in Okaloosa County. They lived happily there, with Mark frequently visiting Betsy's classroom with snakes and other reptiles. The children loved his visits. On February 17, 1972, Mark was killed in a training accident, a tragedy that shattered the close-knit Ranger community. Betsy lost the love of her life. She never remarried, but went on to get her doctorate in education and dedicated her life to teaching hundreds of the area's brightest students in the district's gifted program. On March 16, 2017, Betsy Christensen was invited to a ceremony to name the new 6th Ranger Training Battalion's headquarters in honor of Mark Christensen. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Scott Nelson. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
This is Bird Note. Julia D'Olivera is a paleo artist. That means she brings extinct species to life in her artwork. For each project, she learns everything she can about the species to come up with a realistic portrait.
Color is not usually preserved, so we do have to gather information about its environment, of its biological niche. Like, was it a predator? Did it live in open areas or in woodlands? Because it all influences color.
And she includes the landscape, the plants, and other animals in her final illustration of the species. When Julia recreates pterosaurs, an extinct group of flying reptiles, modern birds help her imagine how they might have looked. Like birds, pterosaurs may have had brightly colored bodies to help attract mates.
A lot of my reference material for reconstructing the tissues, the face tissues, are from birds, from living birds. If we look closely, we see a lot of things we see in the fossil record in living animals. So they were probably a lot like our living animals.
Julia hopes her paleo art offers something different from the grotesque versions of dinosaurs in movies she remembers from growing up.
We had a lot of paleo art that portrayed extinct animals as monsters, and the Earth was just a monster show. It was not. It was our planet, but with different creatures, and these creatures were regular creatures.
See some of Julia's amazing paleo art on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Connor Guerin.
What if we told you that the time your internet went down...
People just assume that, oh, my internet went down for 5 minutes.
Or the time your cell phone went berserk...
My phone has been goofed.
Or your car brakes stopped working.
I can't slow down.
That it was caused by...
A zing from deep space?
A cosmic ray from a distant star.
Great Scott!
Galactic Gremlins on the next Radio Lab.
Saturday at noon, 11 Mountain.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Main Street. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, you can hear this and past episodes of Main Street at our website at prairiepublic.org or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Monday on the show, Matt Olien will lead a discussion of today's news in North Dakota with journalist Dave Thompson, April Baumgarten, Michael Standard, and Jack Zaleski. We hope you can join us again Monday on Main Street.